How is it that we find ourselves surrounded by such complexity, such elegance?
The genes of you and me, the genes of you and me, we're all made of DNA. We're all made of the same chemical DNA. We're all made of DNA.
Hi, you're listening to DNA Today, a podcast and radio show where we discover new advances in the world of genetics. From genetic technology like CRISPR to rare diseases to new research, we have you covered. For a decade, DNA Today has brought you the voices of leaders in genetics. I'm Kira Dineen. I'm a certified genetic counselor and your host. PerkinElmer Genomics is a global leader in genetic testing focusing on rare diseases, inherited disorders, newborn screening, and hereditary cancer. Testing services support the full continuum of care from preconception and prenatal to neonatal, pediatric, and adult. Testing options include sequencing for targeted genes, multiple genes, the whole exome or genome, and copy number variations. Using a simple saliva or blood sample, PerkinElmer Genomics answers complex genetic questions that can proactively inform patient care and end the diagnostic odyssey for families. Learn more at PerkinElmerGenomics.com. Have you heard of the Blueprint Genetics My Retina Tracker program? This program offers eligible patients in the U.S. no-cost comprehensive genetic testing and counseling for their inherited retinal degeneration. The My Retina Tracker program panel includes 351 genes, mitochondrial DNA, and non-coding variant assessment. Stay tuned for our interview with Blueprint Genetics about the My Retina Tracker program and the patient registry on a future episode of DNA Today. In the meantime, you can learn more at BlueprintGenetics.com. Again, that's BlueprintGenetics.com. Joining me for our last episode of Rare Disease Month is Keith MacArthur. Keith is the co-founder and CEO of Cure Grin, a nonprofit rare disease organization. He's a published author and a fellow science podcaster. He is the host of my favorite podcast from 2020 that really got me through the beginning of COVID, Unlocking Bryson's Brain. And we'll kind of mention your other podcast that you've had in 2021. But thank you so much, Keith, for coming on the show. I feel like I know you to some degree just from listening to your podcast.
Yeah, it's great to be here. Thanks for inviting me.
So tell me about your beautiful son, Bryson. I hear that he's a Blue Jays fan like you. So tell me a little bit about Bryson.
He is a Blue Jays fan. Yeah. So Bryson is 15 now. And he, for the first couple months of his life, everything seemed like it was okay. And then when Bryson was around 2 months, we actually went into a photography studio, into Sears Portrait Studio, and they were taking baby pictures. And the photographer was kind of doing all the standard shots. And then there's this one shot where they try to get kids to prop their heads up on their fists. And when he was trying to do that with Bryson's head, yeah, it just kept like falling over. And so the photographer couldn't understand why. And that was kind of the first sign for us that something was not quite typical with Bryson. And so we went into the checkup and doctors confirmed, yeah, he has low muscle tone and he wasn't tracking objects properly. And so that kind of began a 10-year diagnostic odyssey for us to find out what was going on with Bryson. But in terms of what, we can talk more about that, but in terms of what Bryson's like today, I mean, he's a happy, social, loving little guy. Most of the time he's really great to be around. He's got a lot of challenges. You know, he can't walk or pilot his own wheelchair. He needs us to help him get around, and he needs help with feeding and toileting, and he's nonverbal, learning some kind of nonverbal communication. And then the biggest challenge that we have is that he has these episodes that we've kind of struggled to figure out what they are.
Yeah, so certainly a lot of challenges is a lot of rare disease parents can certainly, you know, connect with you on that. And, you know, I think during the podcast, you shared a lot about your family. I mean, we heard from your wife, Laura, and your eldest son, Connor, and just your perspectives on all of this and really just sharing and getting very intimate, I think, with the audience in terms of your perspective and your experience so far. And, you know, I'm coming from the prenatal genetic counselor background, so that's how I'm kind of thinking through this. And oftentimes I have parents say, they don't care about the sex of their baby. They just want their baby to be healthy. And that struck a chord with me when you mentioned that during the episodes, and that you also had that mindset before having Bryson, and that you've adjusted that mindset since. What has your emotional process been like in terms of reimagining what Bryson's future looks like, as well as your own and your family's future?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's such a cliche that we all, so many people say that you don't care about the gender as long as the baby's healthy. And so recognizing that we didn't have a quote unquote healthy baby definitely took some adjusting to. And I think my wife and I and Bryson's brother all adjusted to it in different ways and different times. Honestly, I think I was probably in denial for longer than my wife was. I kept hoping that he would kind of just grow out of it or things would get better. There was a period of time where I was really just, then after that, where I was really just feeling sorry for myself, and finally got to a place where I actually feel, grateful to have Bryson as my son and have learned a lot from him. And so it's a long road, or for me it was a long road to get there, but now I'm definitely at a place where I wouldn't, want any other kid.
And you say that you've learned a lot, throughout Bryson's life and being Bryson's dad. How do you think you've changed as a person? What has Bryson taught you? And, you said he's 15 now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I kind of think, there's that saying that bad things happen to good people. And sometimes I think that it's more that bad things can make you a better person. And that's, I feel like that's been the case with me. So just being with Bryson and exposed to someone and responsible for someone who needs help with everything, you have to become a lot less selfish and recognize that you don't necessarily have your own time anymore. Or if you do, it's very limited. Like someone else relies on you. So I think that's one area. And then I think in another, Bryson's probably made me like even just more generally a champion of the underdog, and especially with other people with other disabled people.
Yeah, definitely. And you said that it took quite a while, that the diagnostic odyssey for Bryson is the case with a lot of people with rare diseases. And he was 9 when he was diagnosed with GRN, is
that
right?
He was 9, yeah. So before that, we'd had over a dozen blood tests, 2 MRIs, a biopsy, all EEGs. So there were just so many different tests. And then we finally got a whole exome sequencing that found this variant that was, thought to be likely significant, likely pathogenic, and my wife and I didn't have it. And things have really changed. So now some of the GRN genes are on the newborn screens for epilepsy. So if kids have early epilepsy, then they can, get a screen sometimes while they're in the hospital and get a diagnosis as soon as those results come back. So we have people coming into the GRN community now with kids who are like 3 weeks old that already have a diagnosis. So it's a huge change from what we went through.
Very big change. I mean, certainly there's been people with a GRN disorder that are in their late 20s when they were diagnosed that you've shared on the show. And so that's really great that it's on these panels now for people that are experiencing seizures or seizure-like episodes. What are some of the other conditions that Bryson was considered for? I know SMA was one of the ones that you and Laura were certainly concerned about and waiting a long time for those results, unfortunately.
Yeah, I think that many of just the most common ones, so Angelman's, Fragile X, or some of the more common rare diseases he was diagnosed for. I don't remember them all. Pompe syndrome, I think. But it was great to finally get to a place where we had that diagnosis.
And you said with that diagnosis, it came from whole exome sequencing. So for people that aren't familiar, this is where we're looking at the section of the genome that has active genes to look to see if there's any differences in that could lead to symptoms or a disorder. And this was really life-changing for your family to be able to actually have an answer to why Bryson is a little bit different. What was your first question when receiving these results from your genetic counselor in terms of, okay, you have these results and you're waiting for
the session to be able to go over the details, but what did you and Laura Bryson's mom, you know, what were you concerned about right away?
Yeah, I mean, the biggest fear, I think, for us for the previous 9.5 years had been, we just didn't know if this was something that was going to be degenerative, like how it was going to impact Bryson's lifespan, whether he was going to lose skills. And so even before, you know, we went into the office to get the diagnosis, but even before that, my wife was on the phone with a genetics counselor and was kind of like, well, so could you tell me anything? Like, is it degenerative? And I think, I can't remember exactly what she said, but she sort of reassured Laura that it was probably going to be okay. And in that regard, and I mean, interestingly, even since that, things have changed a little bit. So Grin still isn't considered a degenerative disease, but there are more than a dozen kids that we know who have died from symptoms related to Grin disorder. So sometimes breathing issues, sometimes choking. So both of those can be as a result of low muscle tone or potentially autonomic challenges related to Grin disorder.
Certainly, and it wasn't information that you had at the time because there was only a few people diagnosed in the world with Grin at that point. How has that changed in the years since? I mean, now we're recording in 2022. How many people have been identified with Grin that's in your network now?
I mean, I've kept kind of broadening how I think of this disorder. So I started thinking of it as just GRIN1, which is the specific gene that Bryson has. And then when a group of families got together to start Cure Grin, we kind of expanded it to all of the different Grin genes. And then just over the last few months, we've expanded it to other genes that also code these ion-gated receptors in the brain. And you know, among that whole group, we know of somewhere between 1,500 and 2,000 patients. I mean, I'm sure that there's a lot more. There's been one estimate that puts the rate of incidence a lot higher. But yeah, the you know, genetic testing is still a big issue. And while it's becoming more common in North America and Europe and parts of Asia, it's, you know, it's not done as widely in South America yet or Africa. And, you know, even many people in the United States don't have easy access to it.
Yeah, certainly I think cost is an issue and just access to be able to meet with a provider that's going to think, okay, ordering a whole exome sequence is the best test for this person. And I think in general with genetic testing in developed countries, I think we are seeing that we're transitioning to that over ordering panels and just jumping right to whole exome.
I mean, it's the right thing to do. The cost has just fallen so much. I think when Bryson did it, it was, you know, for my wife and I and Bryson, it was over $20,000 for those three tests. And now, you know, you could do all of those for less than $1,000.
I think the cost of sequencing has dropped dramatically in the last few decades and, you know, even more dramatically in the last few years. Now, you're coming from Toronto. That's where you're based. How was your experience with the Canadian healthcare system? Because, you know, I'm US-based, so it's a little bit different. But what was your experience in terms of, you know, seeking out this genetic testing, meeting with the genetic counselor and other genetic experts?
Yeah, so, I mean, it's hard to know because to compare really because we haven't lived in the US. So definitely so grateful for the fact that in some ways, Bryson's challenge has been a burden because, you know, we're paying for a full-time private caregiver, a financial burden. But, you know, we haven't ever had to worry about the medical side of things. So, so it's hard to know. Like, there's definitely times where we've had to wait for months for an appointment with a specialist. And but then I've talked to families in the U.S. and depending on the insurance company or where they live, it can be the same there too. So it's hard for me to really say how different the situation would be here from the U.S.
You know, there's a lot of parallels I think between the U.S. and Canada in terms of support and having wait times be similar, as you said. Now, when you started CureGRIN, which is the organization that you started, that you know we've been alluding to, how did this start? I mean, you started by connecting with families that also had children with a variant, a mutation in GRIN1 or other related genes. How was that first encounter when you had your first meetup? I mean, it's been annual, at least for the first few years.
Yeah, pre-COVID it was annual. Yeah. Yeah, it was amazing. And that was one of the biggest changes when we first got the diagnosis. So nothing really changed in terms of treatment, but the biggest thing that changed is that we felt like we were now part of this community and we could talk with other parents who understood better than any of people in healthcare, you know, could at that time, because there was very little that had been published. Very few kids had been diagnosed. And so other parents were really the experts. And we said, like, he's doing this. Is that normal? Are your kids doing this? And so meeting up in person with a group of, I think it was 7 or 8 families, was just an incredible experience. That's been one of the toughest things about the pandemic, is that we've just, actually CureGRIN, we've been trying to hold an in-person conference for, since 2020, we've just delayed it for the third time. So we're hoping it will be next year, 2023. We're gonna have it in Boston.
Did you know that genetic testing can pinpoint the cause of inherited retinal disease in about 60 to 70% of cases? Identifying the disease-causing gene mutation can help individuals qualify for a clinical trial for an emerging therapy, many of which now are gene or mutation-specific. The My Retina Tracker program offers no-cost, comprehensive genetic testing and counseling to eligible patients in the U.S. for inherited retinal degeneration. The My Retina Tracker is designed for people with a clinical suspicion or a diagnosis of a retinal dystrophy. Blueprint's My Retina Tracker program panel includes 351 genes and assessment of non-coding variants. The panel has excellent coverage of the RPGR-ORF15 region, which is critical in retinitis pigmentosa diagnoses. And here's a bonus, the panel includes the maternally inherited mitochondrial genome. Stay tuned for our interview with Blueprint Genetics about the My Retina Tracker program and the patient registry being established on a future episode of DNA Today. In the meantime, you can learn more at blueprintgenetics.com. Again, that's blueprintgenetics.com. Did you know PerkinElmer Genomics was one of the first laboratories to offer whole genome sequencing on a clinical basis? Whole genome sequencing can maximize clinical diagnostic yield for patients. With a turnaround time of 6 weeks, PerkinElmer's whole genome sequencing test is designed to provide access to additional valuable information compared to an exome. PerkinElmer Genomics provides one of the world's most comprehensive programs for detecting clinically significant genomic changes. PerkinElmer Genomics delivers knowledge that can empower health. PerkinElmer is a global leader committed to innovating for a healthier world. Join their mission at PerkinElmerGenomics.com. And also, stay tuned for our interview with PerkinElmer, where we're going to be exploring the power of whole genome sequencing. I'll also tease that my guest for this episode is a world-renowned geneticist, so you are not going to want to miss this one. But while you wait for the episode, head over to PerkinElmerGenomics.com to start discovering all PerkinElmer has to offer.
So you've met with a lot of genetic experts in the past few years, and one of the most exciting aspects that I've heard about is developing CRISPR technology and everything that's been such a huge focus in genetics in general, with Nobel Prize winners, scientists with CRISPR. One of the things that you shared towards the end of Unlocking Bryson's Brain was developing a mouse, and you kind of named it like a Bryson mouse, that has the same genetic change as Bryson. Tell us a little bit about that and that experience of meeting with these genetic experts and researchers to develop this, and what research that you're, you know, looking to learn from this and what we've gotten so far.
Yeah, well, so the mice, I mean, they make these knock-in mice where they're basically replicating not just GRIN1, but this mouse, it was like Bryson's precise variant. So there's hundreds of different variants within the GRIN disorder category. And so it has, you know, Bryson's precise DNA for that specific gene. And so you know, there's been a number of things that they've been able to do. So some of the tests are hard on the mice, where they, you know, have to euthanize them and then take slices from the mice's from the mouse's brain and do electrophysiology on it. And so from that, they can kind of understand better what's actually going on in Bryson's brain. So there's a kind of complicated electrophysiology going on in NMDA receptors, but they can sort of see if these receptors are opening too wide or if they're not opening wide enough through this mouse test. But one of the even more exciting opportunities is using these animals for preclinical work, right? So testing either drugs or gene therapies on them and just seeing what could work. So that is starting, we're starting to do that, and that's like, there's some really exciting opportunities around that.
It's interesting that there could be drugs available that we just don't know about that could help people with Grin disorders. So even, I remember you mentioning that at one point Bryson was on a medication that's usually prescribed to people that may have Alzheimer's, and then kind of figuring out like, okay, is this going to be helping in terms of what is different molecularly with his brain, or is this, you know, neutral, not helping or hurting? Are there any specific drugs or anything that is being worked on now, or maybe that's, you know, not public information?
Yeah, so there is, there's a new biotech company called Grin Therapeutics that has found an orphan drug, and they're in talks with the FDA and European regulators about starting preclinical trials on some Grin patients, and hopefully that would happen this year. The other thing that is really exciting, and this actually came out of a meeting that I had while I was doing the podcast, but there's a company in Boston called Tomology. They're a gene therapy company. And when my wife Laura and I were meeting with them, we asked if we could use their technology on the Bryson mouse or other Grin mice. And they agreed. I don't know if they really knew what they were getting into, but they said sure, because we were in front of them and they were being generous. And so since then, I've connected them with researchers, and I put them and the researchers together, and I learned about this grant opportunity that Simons had. And together we kind of put together a proposal and just got Dr. Amy Ramsey at University of Toronto is the lead on it, and she just got a grant for over $1 million to study gene therapy on these mice. So so that's, you know, just announced, and we're super excited about what we can learn from that.
Congratulations. I mean, that is just so exciting to have funding to be able to move forward with the research and preclinical trials and everything. And you know, it's really more remarkable just to see where you started from when, you know, first getting the diagnosis of like, okay, GRIN1 mutation, like, what does this mean? To now you have mouse models and you have a potential therapy that could help. So it's definitely exciting to see and just how fast things changes in genetics. Is there any other updates that you've had since the show ended? You had a follow-up episode in 2021 and just talking about, you know, COVID's impact on your family. Is there anything else that's changed?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing is that we know that now that this gene therapy trial is going to go ahead, there's other drugs that we know of that people are hoping to bring to clinical trial soon that I can't talk about yet.
Sure.
But, you know, and these drugs work on mice. That doesn't mean that, or cells, that doesn't mean that they'll necessarily work on people. And in fact, you know, most clinical trials don't meet the standards that are set out and the goals that are set out. But we're hopeful. Obviously, the more potential therapies people identify, the more go to clinical trial, the more chance we'll find some that will have success.
It's exciting just to hear about the developments, and we'll certainly keep our audience updated, you know, on what we have from there. I also wanted to touch on just like your experience in terms of public perception and interaction with people that have disabilities or people in the rare disease community. On the podcast, you shared, you know, mixed experiences of being in public with Bryson, from people praying for Bryson, people stopping you guys in the mall and saying, wow, Bryson is so beautiful and has such a beautiful and genuine smile. What would you want the public to know in terms of, like, if they see you, how you would like to be engaged with them and information that you would want people to know, you know, obviously not speaking for the entire rare disease community, but just, you know, coming from your family's perspective and just advice you have for the public in terms of being embracing and asking the right questions.
Yeah, and, you know, it's something that I'm thinking about even more, because one thing that I've heard from parents with older kids is that when their kids are young, a lot of people will like look at them and just think that their disability makes them sort of extra cute, which, you know, is good, I guess, good and also patronizing at the same time, maybe. But it gets worse often as these kids get older. And, you know, if you're out with your young adults and they're screaming in public or, you know, drooling or have different grimaces or different facial expressions, like people can be scared of them and can react differently. So yeah, it is tough. I mean, I think that so far I would much rather when I don't mind at all when people come and say hi or something, and certainly, like, you know, often when we're out walking with other people, like, Bryson will smile at people when they go by, and I can't see it because I'm pushing behind him, but I can see other people smiling back, and so I know what's going on. So I think those interactions are all great, but some people certainly, many disabled families would have a different perspective.
You know, well said, and just that everybody's going to have a different experience, and depending, you know, on those factors. Is there anything else that you want to share, you know, as we wrap up with the rare disease community? Anything that you've learned along the way? I know you've kind of mentioned in Unlocking Bryson's Brain that, you know, you've come a long way in terms of the years since his diagnosis. Anything to share, especially with parents that are new to the community?
For me personally, I never felt, I mentioned this before, but I never felt part of a community before Bryson got a diagnosis. And looking back, I mean, there are organizations and groups that have a lot of people that, you know, with undiagnosed diseases. And I kind of wish maybe that I had gotten involved more there and found a community there. So I guess that would be my one piece of advice is, like, you know, you don't necessarily need to get that diagnosis before you find the community. And then, yeah, once you do, like, definitely seek out your community and get involved. Like, there's just so much that families can do, you know, to help raise funds and raise awareness and do advocacy with their local governments. And so, you know, we really, really rely on that for everything that we do. And so we're glad and grateful to have a really engaged GREE community.
And I wanted to give a shout out for season two, in some ways, Unlocking the Fountain, which was just really interesting. You dive into, you know, aging, and, you know, you talked about telomeres and so many different aspects there, and kind of sharing your own medical journey with that. So definitely recommend, obviously, Unlocking Bryson's Brain for people that haven't heard of it yet, but also the new season, Unlocking the Fountain. You know, I was always looking for that next episode. Yes, new episode.
That's great.
Really appreciate it. And it's such a, you know, highly produced show where you're able to really take snippets, and it's such a journey that listeners go on, and just love how you're able to have so many different interviews and voices. Looking forward to whatever your next project is.
Awesome. Well, thank you. Yeah, it's a great team at the CBC, the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation, that I worked with to put it together. And so, you know, definitely much more than just me that made it so great.
Really appreciate, you know, you, Keith, coming on the show and closing out Rare Disease Month for us here. Listeners, we have over 30 episodes, I think, at this point, focused on specific rare diseases. So definitely recommend checking all of those out. Thank you, Keith, again, for coming on the show and just being a fellow science podcaster.
Thanks, Kira. This has been fun.
For more information about today's episode, visit dnapodcast.com, where you can also stream all episodes of the show. We encourage your questions, comments, guest pitches, and ideas. Send them all into info@dnapodcast.com. Search DNA Today on Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, Facebook, so you can connect with us there. And a favor, please rate and review the podcast on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you listen. This truly helps us climb the charts and allow more genetic nerds like yourself to find the show. DNA Today is hosted and produced by myself, Kira Dineen. Our social media lead is Corinne Merlino. Our video lead is Amanda Andrioli. Thanks for listening, and join us next time to discover new advances in the world of genetics.
The genes of you and me, the genes of you and me, we're all made of DNA. We're all made of the same chemical DNA.